Good afternoon. Today is Thursday, August the 9th, 222nd day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon is our very own horse racing expert, Chuck Thomas.
Well, thank you, Brian. It's nice to be here.
And to be recognized for your skill set, right?
Yeah, my horse racing skill set. That's correct, right?
There we go. Now, I don't know what your hit ratio was last year when we did this.
I
lost my notes.
It was good. It was very good. In the last two or three years at the Humboldt County Fair, I've come away a winner for those 3 years, and no guarantee that'll happen this year. But I feel good about it. I think I got an understanding of how the track works, and I've been involved with horses since I was a little boy.
Oh, we'll talk about what that means.
Well, I started. My mom put me No, my mom put me on a Pinto, and the traveling photographer came in front of our house, and I got my picture taken. That's when it started.
I thought you drove a Pinto. Okay, my mistake. We'll talk a little bit about the Humboldt County horse races and some of the specifics themselves about horse racing and what differentiates the winners from the losers. We'll find out when we come back.
I'm Mark Viette with today's garden tip about not being a prunomaniac. The conscientious gardener needs to know that each kind of plant has its own best time to be pruned. Avoid shearing flowering plants into shapes which really look unnatural. Thin flowering shrubs with a hand pruner. I'm Mark Viette with today's garden tip.
You've got to get up pretty early in the morning to hear Mark Viette and his wealth of gardening knowledge. 5 to 7 a.m. Sundays on KWSW 980.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and Information Times 313. We're back to talk shop this afternoon with Chuck Thomas, but before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from Russell Baker, who was known to have said, quote, "When compelled to cook, I produce a meal that would make a sword swallower gag."
Wow. Wouldn't want to eat dinner at his house.
Yeah, come on over. What is the most challenging thing, Chuck, about horse racing?
Well, horses are, living creatures, and they're unpredictable, and it is very difficult to get a handle on what they're going to do, no matter what the form says. They're capable of unbelievable surprises, and that's why people keep coming back, I guess, but it's also why most people are losers when they're betting on horses. It's very hard.
Is there much of a difference between horse race, other than the obvious, horse racing and dog racing and some of the other animals that are bet upon?
I guess there is. The main difference to me would be that in horses, it is hard to breed. The gestation period for a horse is like 11 months, and it's very difficult to get a horse. And like a mare has one colt every, so many years. Where in dogs, dogs have many puppies in the litter, and they can find the fast dogs in just a couple generations. Like within 1 year, they can have 20 or 30 or more dogs to choose from. So that's kind of one of the things about dog racing I don't like. So I kind of like the idea that a lot of time and money is invested in each individual horse. That allows the horse to get a better chance to see if he can run.
Kind of like, do you prefer Paul Masson wine?
No, I like Robert Mondavi.
Okay. Yeah. I would say sell no wine.
That's all I drink.
Time.
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Paul Masson. Yeah, I don't buy that anymore since got in the radio business.
Yeah. I would like to consider that an upgrade. We'll leave that for speculation.
Okay.
So when you're looking at horses, there are larger horse breeds or individual horses. There are smaller ones. There are thinner ones. There are heavier ones. Is there a sport where there's a parallel analogy, like with basketball? Okay, if you're looking for a certain type of basketball player, you know what you're looking for. If in baseball, you're looking for a certain set of characteristics, track and field, homage to the Olympics, certain things also. Does that hold true with horses also as well in horse racing?
Well, it does. There's a select group of people maybe 10, 20 trainers, and different owners that seem to win the Kentucky Derby every year or the big races like that. They buy a lot of these horses at sales, and they really know what they're looking for. They really understand conformation, and there's a lot to learning about horses and their conformation. And then when you combine that with the actual pedigree of the horse, they have it pretty well dialed in. They can't guarantee any one horse is going to win the Kentucky Derby, but they always manage to come up with the winner out of, you know, a handful of horses that they choose from. So it's always the same people that win.
And the lineage really is, there's a genetic component.
Absolutely. And if you want to buy what's considered the best genetics, that's going to cost you like $1 million for a colt, where it's smaller sales all across the United States. You could buy horses at sale for $500. So they have kind of figured it out on who's most likely to win the races.
What is it that the breeders breed for?
Well, in thoroughbreds, they breed for speed, and they breed for early speed. They want precocious colts and fillies that run fast early.
Early in the race or early in their age?
Early in their age. And that's kind of the term they use, is precocious. That means a very young horse that can run very fast. That's not going to take 3 or 4 or 5 years to mature. And actually, we'll call them the older days, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago or more. Horses matured slower, but seemed to be maybe a little sounder and lasted longer. They were racing 5 years old, 6 years old, 7 years old. Now horses race at 2 years old, 3 years old, and many of them are done before they even become 4 years old. So,
when does a horse hit maturity?
A horse is in his prime at 5 years old.
So these would be the equivalent of teenagers.
Yeah.
And then they're done kind of like, I guess, gymnastics?
Yeah.
Done by your early 20s, and that's about all she wrote.
Yeah, it is kind of like that. And that's one of the complaints a lot of people have about the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown races, is these are really young horses, like you say, teenagers, and they're going the most grueling distances, and distances that older horses never go. So it's quite a test of champions, and the young horses are forced to be the ones that that try to win those races.
Is there any thought to having a senior circuit? 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds?
Well, there is one already, and there's a lot of important races for older horses too. And so horses can race. I think the legal age, they can't race past 14, but that's very rare to find a horse that old that can run.
So they're running from instead of to at that point. It's 3:19.
There's a brand new show on KEKA 101 Thunder Country, Country Gold with Randy Owen, Sunday evenings from 8 till midnight. It's a 4-hour intensive music show hosted by the lead vocalist of the group Alabama. Country Gold will feature 13 songs per hour and highlighted music from the 70s to the mid-90s. Be sure to listen to KEKA 101 Thunder Country, Sunday evening from 8 till midnight. Country Gold with Randy Owen.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and information time is 3:23. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Chuck Thomas. Chuck, the concept of horse racing and wagering, either the big time or the little, you know, the county fair circuit. We're probably, more of our listeners have attended that than they have to Santa Anita or Golden Gate Fields or some of the other large, well-known facilities. Are there parallels? Are there similarities? Or is it the difference between major leagues and seeing the local semi-pro team? Yeah, it's the same game, but there's such a distinction between everything.
Well, there are a lot of parallels. You know, actually, horse racing in California started in 1936, pari-mutuel wagering, and the justification for it with the legislature, it was to promote agriculture. And so the county fairs were the first ones to have horse races in California, and the Santa Anitas and the Hollywood Parks and the Del Mars, they came along later. So once people figured out there was money in it, then, you know, these other tracks came along. And, of course, like famous people got involved, like Bing Crosby started Del Mar. And there's the stories behind all the big tracks. But all horses trace their betting routes to the fairs in California. And most of the top horses on the fair now, the very best on the fair, aren't actually, very few of those would be good enough to race at Hollywood Park or Santa Anita or Del Mar. But the reverse happens more often, where a top horse at a big track will slowly lose his speed, you know, his ability, and will work his way down through the fair circuit until he can no longer race.
So there's a possibility that some of the county fairs, those horses actually would have had the history of being at some of those big tracks, being successful, and
sure.
Then things just kind of change as life goes on?
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. If you were to take some kind of a tally of all the horses in Ferndale, you'd find some really interesting stories with some really great breeding and some horses that at one time had a lot of potential. You have to remember that all the horses that race are all very fragile, and what one day could be tremendous upside and potential, the very next day could have that dream shattered through an injury or something like that. Not necessarily an injury that threatens the horse's life, but an injury that compromises his ability, still allows him to race, but not at the level he could have raced at. So most horses have a great history and trace back to famous horses, almost all of them.
So as you're looking at the various county fairs throughout the state or county fairs throughout the country, and if they have horse racing, what is it that you look for as somebody who has had that experience at the big time as well as at the local fairs?
Well, if the one good thing about the county fair in Ferndale is you know most of us who are interested in it will be there, and we can see the horses, and just a little common sense to start with can really help you a lot. Like, you're looking for the horses in the paddock that aren't sweating a lot, that aren't agitated, that appear to be pretty calm, but yet not dull. They have to be kind of calm but not dull, and you can kind of look at the way they're interacting with their trainer. So that'd be the first thing to look for. Let's look for horses that appear to be comfortable in their surroundings. Now, that doesn't mean they can run a lick, but that's a good start. And from there, you know, most people refer to the racing form and look at their past performances, and a combination of the two can often lead you to a good horse.
Is there much difference on the track itself, Chuck? I mean, other than the wet-dry variable, is a horse race track a horse race track?
Absolutely not. In Ferndale has a very unique track. It's a half-mile track, and I don't know of another one in California. Most tracks are a mile. So if you're a horse coming to race in Ferndale, or if you're a jockey returning, you've learned how to race on this half-mile oval, because there's going to be a lot more turns, and you got to stay closer to the rail. And like a race car, you know, if you go out too far, because it's not banked that much, you know, you kind of lose your position, so you have to stay hugged to the rail. So yeah, there's a lot to the Ferndale track. Other tracks, some, you know, there's grass courses, and there's these artificial surfaces now they call polytrack, and there's still dirt. So every track is very unique, and top handicappers are able to discern the difference in what individual horses might prefer.
So the jockey also would then kind of have to get to understand, well, I guess like golf, get to understand the golf course before you're out there and know some of the intricacies of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I do starting off at the Ferndale affair as far as betting, I bet on the jockeys that did good the previous year, because I know that they're going to be on pretty good horses, because the trainers know they had a good year last year, and these jockeys know how to negotiate the course. So like Chris Russell was the leading jockey last year. He was so far and away the best jockey that if he's back this year, he's going to have a lot of winners. And so Chris Russell, that's a name to remember, and you might think about betting on him.
With him.
yeah, he might not be betting, so you might not be betting with him, but
okay.
Bet on the horse he's riding. And
Does the half-mile track, does that give an advantage to horses that aren't quite so fast because there are no long straightaways?
Well, that's interesting. Speed is critical, but in theory, at least, if you could get on the lead and stay in the turns, it'd be hard for horses to pass you. So, yeah, maybe so. But another way to put it might also be that horses that like to jump out of the gate first and move to the lead, they have a tremendous advantage because it's hard to come from behind on a small track that you're going around in circles on that many circles, that many turns.
KINS, News and Information Times, 3:30. We'll be back with more from Chuck Thomas.
There's never been a clear winner in the so-called battle of the sexes, but in the battle for bacteria-free hands, one half of the population is germier than the other. So whose hands are cleaner, men or women? Hi, I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and here's to your health. The research has tested 51 college students using a new detailed system for detecting bacterial DNA. But remember, most of the bacteria in our bodies is either harmless or beneficial.
Dr. Hoffman answers some of your health questions on Health Talk, Saturday mornings, 9 to 11 on KWSW 980 AM.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Chuck Thomas. Chuck has a history with horses. Not only did you start young, but you did it as a profession for a little bit, didn't you?
I did, yes. I had a breeding farm, and I raced horses, and I went to sales and bought horses, and I was like a bloodstock agent. I went all over the United States, actually. I went to New York to buy horses, and it was.
So what happened?
Well, you know, it's a tough business, and I was in it to make money, and I wasn't like an extremely wealthy person that where it was a hobby. With me, it was a business, and I did have a little bad luck, horses going lame. I had really some spectacular horses that did go lame, and it really was a major setback for me. So, but in the end, I had had my fun in the sun with horses, and I decided to move on, and I'm glad I did, actually.
So as people perceive that they can get wealthy betting on the horses, myth or reality?
Well, you know, Brian, it's not a myth at all. I mean, I really figured it out, but I'm not really willing to share that information on air right now.
Yeah.
Actually, no. That I don't think anybody's completely figured it out. Some people are better handicappers than others, but it's a tough sport. And one thing that makes it so tough, besides the unpredictable nature of horses, is the state takes out so much money in every betting dollar. So they take out about 24%. So they don't leave you much to split with the people that are betting. So it's really hard to be a winner. Especially up here on the North Coast, we go to the Humboldt County Fair, and we love it so much because it's so much fun, and it's that one thing we get to do once a year.
So more of recreation than avocation.
It is recreation, and just like if going to a casino or, you know, going to Tahoe or something, it might be smart to say, well, I'm going to have fun, but I'm going to try to win some money, but I'm going to limit my losses, and I'm not going to allow myself to lose more than, you know, X amount of dollars. And concentrate on having fun.
So as you go to the fair and then the horse track, you mentioned already you looking at the horses is something that would have a value for some folks.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about the program? Is that something, does it really tell you an awful lot? Is the position in the gate more important than perhaps the history? You mentioned the jockey also. Is that more critical? If you were going to prioritize, what's one, two, three, maybe go down as far as four?
Well, at Ferndale, one's the best post and two's second best and so forth and so on. And whoever has the outside is always at the most disadvantage. That doesn't mean the horses won't win from out there, but it's very difficult. And if you know, if a person knew nothing about horse racing, but they just wanted to go to Ferndale and make some bets and have some fun, and they don't want to buy a program, they don't want to do anything, just bet on the first four numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, and for whatever your means is or your reason, you know, of why you like one over another, just bet on those four numbers. That will get you a lot of winners. Then if you take it one step beyond that and find a couple jockeys you like Chris Russell, and a few others, then only bet on them when they're on inside posts. You got a really good chance of winning. So
a combination of him out of the first or second gate.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I am giving away my own little, it's not really that big of a secret, but that would be my strategy at the beginning of this meet coming up next week is to bet him if he's here. Chris Russell, he is a top jockey up here, and he will be on live horses. So you can't just bet on him the whole meet, but that's a one way to get started.
So what are the nuances? Where do you find that little extra? Is that how the horse is acting in the – in the stall or in the stable or in the gate? Well, I guess if they're in the gate, it's too late. How they performed last year or last time or last race, how do you get a sense of whether or not a horse might be, you know, all those other things are there, but things are just a little out of sorts for the animal itself?
Yeah, of course, it's hard for us to know exactly what the horse is feeling, but we sort of have an idea if they're agitated. And not only... That only does so much, though. You can't totally depend on that. Another thing I do is I look for horses that have won here before. Any horse that won at Ferndale last year that's racing here this year has got an excellent chance to win here again because he likes to run on this track and this surface. So jockeys that won here last year, horses that won here last year, trainers that had horses that won here last year, that is where to start.
So it's almost a good historical lesson.
It is.
Do your research, and that'll help out.
I like horses that have, well, I mean, everybody likes horses that have raced at big tracks. There will be some horses in Ferndale that were in Southern California and other big tracks that somehow ended up here. You have to look at them pretty carefully, even if they have bad running lines and they haven't been doing too well. They might really wake up here. So that's another thing, you know, look for horses with maybe a little back class, we call it.
Back class?
Back class, yeah. We're always looking for back class and racing. Kind of gives
why
us.
I always ended up in the classroom too.
The back of the class.
Back of the classroom.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's different.
Yeah, that's one of the words they associated with me being a little different.
Yeah. Well.
KINS News Information Time. It's 3:42. We'll be back with more from Chuck Thomas.
Water always wins. That's why there's a Grand Canyon. I'm Glenn Higgy, America's master handyman. Keeping water away from your home's foundation is one of the most important things you can do. If your home is on a crawl space, you need to know what is going on under your feet. Your home's structural integrity and your family's health may depend on it.
Listen to Glenn Higgy, Sunday morning, 7 to 8 a.m. on KWSW 980.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and Information Times, 3:45. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Chuck Thomas. Chuck, how do they set the odds of a horse race?
The public sets the odds. It's called parimutuel wagering. And so it's all dependent on what people bet on what horses. The track owner is sort of the stakeholder. They separate the money, take out their cut, take out the cut for the state, and then redistribute it to the public. And that's why... if up here you can't really bet a lot because the more you bet, it really affects the odds, and so you got to kind of back off. The big bettors down in Southern California, they can bet thousands of dollars on a race and it's never even felt, or no, you can't even really see it on the tote board. But up here in Ferndale, you bet a lot of money on a horse and it shows up on the board.
Now, if let's say the odds are 2-1, and I am stupid and really excited, and I think. Chuck the plotter is going to win, okay? And Chuck's odds are, let's say, 3-1.
Mm-hmm.
So I throw down that money. Now, do I get to place it at 3-1, or does my money get factored in and then the odds are set?
The odds are constantly fluctuating, and when the gate opens and the race begins, all the betting machines are automatically closed. It's all tied to the same system. And then the final odds are computed right after those machines are shut down. No more bets can be made. And what could be 5-1, like a few seconds before the race starts, could be like 2-1 right when the race starts because of the bet that came in right before the end. So
it's not if we both bet on the same horse, and I do it half an hour before you do, we both end up with the same
odds. And I could have bet it when it was 10-1, and you bet on it was 2-1, but whatever it goes off of, ultimately we both get the same odds.
Oh, so there's no advantage to waiting last minute and throwing money down.
I think there's a major advantage to waiting as long as you can. You get to see how the betting patterns develop and who's getting action and who's not. And you just gather more information as you approach race time, post time.
So would that influence a wager, how others are perceiving it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, your bet should be based on kind of an overlay. You're looking for a horse who's getting paid, who's paying you in return greater than his chances of winning the race. And, well, I think I said that backwards, but you're looking for horses that that offer a lot of value. And you can only tell that by looking at the board. And if you make that bet like 20 minutes before the race goes off, it's really hard to know what's going to happen.
Is the same true with the mule races and some of the other novelty races?
Well, yeah, I think all that would be true. Mules seem to be more predictable. Now, that's because, you know, there's a smaller gene pool represented in all the horses, all the mules that are racing. So there's not so much competition. And if you end up with a good mule, it's going to be hard for another mule to come along and be better than him. And historically, we've had some top mules that have stayed on top of the sport for quite a while.
Oh, they last longer than a thoroughbred?
Yeah, they do. They do seem to last longer. And the thoroughbred is much more dynamic and changes much more rapidly.
Okay, you got 1 minute. What would you suggest somebody who's never waged before in a horse race, what should they do if they're interested next week?
They should find out. They should buy a program. You don't have to buy a racing form. Just bet the inside post positions and just find out who the top jockeys are and just bet on those horses. Just bet on the inside post. That would be the number one thing to do if you knew nothing else.
Well, I thought it was going to be like, you know, a sandwich or a hot dog and your favorite cold beverage.
And bet the gray horse, too. I always bet the gray.
Oh, really?
I always do. I always bet the gray horse.
What if they're all gray?
Then I don't do it. But if there's only one gray horse, I always bet the gray. Always. I learned that from my grandmother. And one of them, they win a lot. Gray horses are very good, but they're easy to keep track of as they travel around the track.
It's easier to watch.
Yeah, they're easier to watch, yeah. It's true.
All right, fair enough. And I imagine we're going to be hearing more from you about the horse racing next week.
Well, possibly.
Thanks for coming by, bud.
Bye.
We've been talking shop with Chuck Thomas. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.